This season, Toyota Racing is looking for jugglers.
Aha!
Not the ones who toss balls or rings. Fans that can juggle the rigors of a 10-month-long season across many different racing circuits.
Well, what if I added knives?
What if you added GR Cup, Formula Drift, and off-road racing? If you can juggle it all, then we want you. Be part of the action at toyota.com/racing. Toyota, let's go places. Formula Drift is a registered trademark of Formula Drifts Holdings, LLC.
The following is a production of the Motor Racing Network, the voice of NASCAR. The Motor Racing Network presents NASCAR Live.
The starter puts the white flag in the air. A mile and a half remain between Rajah Caruth and his first career victory.
And he shouldn't get to any of this lap traffic ahead. This time through one and two, he's got one truck separating himself from Tyler Ankrum. Ankrum not close enough. Rajah Caruth down the backstretch.
Caruth down the Nellis straightaway for the final time. It's about 15 truck lengths. His lead in the turn number three. Rajah Caruth comfortably works his way through the corner.
What a moment this is going to be for this young man. Rajah Caruth brings it off of turn four, up through the front stretch, looking for the checkered flag, and he takes it. Rajah Caruth wins in Las Vegas, his very first NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series victory.
I think validation. You know, I've gotten a lot of opportunities over the years, and been the bridesmaid a couple times, so to make it happen today is pretty special.
NASCAR Live is brought to you by Toyota. For the latest Toyota racing information, visit toyotaracing.com. From the MRN studios in Concord, North Carolina, here is your host, Mike Bagley.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of NASCAR Live here on the Motor Racing Network. Mike Bagley and the entire MRN crew here with you as we come off an exciting racing weekend in Las Vegas and get ready to continue our West Coast vibes with a trip to the Phoenix Raceway coming up this weekend for the Shriners Children's 500. Coming up on the show, got a lot going on at Phoenix this weekend. The biggest thing, brand new aerodynamic package for the NASCAR Cup cars. Todd Gordon, co-host of Crew Call, is going to stop by and chat with us about that. Plus, we'll also ask Todd's early season thoughts now that we're three race weekends in. Tim Catalfamo is going to be here to take us through the history of NASCAR competing in Arizona. Daytona 500 winning crew chief Rudy Fugel and the MRN Crew Call gang will join the show. Plus, we'll hear what drivers are saying ahead of this weekend's racing action in Phoenix. To get us going, as he always does, Kyle Rickey is here with the latest check of NASCAR headlines. Kyle, what do you have for us?
Mike, after winning last weekend at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, John Hunter Nemechek will return to pilot the number 20 Toyota for Joe Gibbs Racing this weekend at Phoenix Raceway. Joining him this weekend as a teammate is Eric Almirola, as he is scheduled to compete in a number of events for JGR this season. Other notables competing in the Valley of the Sun in the NASCAR Xfinity Series will include William Byron, piloting the number 17 HendrickCars.com Chevrolet Camaro, and Truck Series regular Corey Heim, who will compete in the number 26 for Sam Hunt Racing. A couple of veteran wheelmen will make their NASCAR debuts in the upcoming weeks. Tricon Garage has announced that they will bring in IMSA driver and former IndyCar competitor Jack Hogsworth, as he'll make his NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series debut at Circuit of the Americas in the number one Toyota Tundra later this month. In the Xfinity Series, Junior Motorsports has inked short track ace Bubba Pollard to a deal that will have him behind the wheel of the number 88 Chevrolet Camaro at Richmond Raceway. Mike.
Thank you, Kyle. Coming up, Todd Gordon will stop by.
Craftsman in your hand, nothing's stopping you. Not a chair, creaky stand, or even engine repair. Craftsman in your hand, nothing you can't do. Make your lawn, make your John, or that kitchen hat on. Craftsman in your hand, nothing's stopping you.
From outdoor care to home and auto repair, do it with Craftsman. Find the tools, equipment, and storage you need at your local Lowe's, Ace Hardware, or Craftsman.com.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. We are headed out west again this weekend, but this time to the Phoenix Raceway for the Shriners Children's 500 race weekend. Joining us on the broadcast out there will be Todd Gordon. Of course, he co-hosts Crew Call here on MRN every single week. Todd, welcome back to NASCAR Live. You ready to pack your bags and head west this weekend?
Excited about it. First time I get to the racetrack, 2024 season. Got a new aero package. Got new body styles for two of them. Got a different tire. It's going to be an excellent weekend.
We've got lots to discuss. We'll get to those things that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. But first, I'm curious what you think about what you've seen in the first three races, Daytona, Atlanta, and now a trip to Las Vegas.
Yeah. I looked at this schedule to start the season and before the season, and back-to-back Speedway-esque events with Daytona and Atlanta, I was anxious there. Knew that there would be some that came out of that in a hole just by the virtues of what Speedway racing is. Had some that did. It's been interesting. We haven't seen the whole picture yet, but Toyota brought out the new Camera XSE body for this year. I think it's raced really well to plate events. I thought there were some aspects of it that would. Ford brought out the Dark Horse, waiting to see where that plays out. And Chevrolet staying with a tried and true. I think they've won every cup race, although I think all three are very competitive at this point.
How long do you give it before you get a good sample size of getting a good gauge about where a team is, where a driver is, where an organization, or in some cases, a manufacturer is? How many races do you give it?
With the way the schedule's laid out and the diversity of what we go to, I think you're going to be Kansas before you really have a lay of the land, especially for the intermediate package, because we've been to Vegas, had a good event out there. I thought the Toyotas actually were pretty good there. I thought, Kyle Larson had a great weekend there. A couple Fords did well. Stuart Haas saw a little gain there, but we're not going to another mile and a half until we get to Texas, which is probably a month out at this point. And I think you need to get to your third data point, and that'll be Kansas for us there. We've got a couple short track races coming up with Phoenix, and then we get to Richmond and Martinsville. I think by the time we get to Martinsville, we'll understand the short track side of things. But try to sort out where everybody's at with the new aero package there. It's a plethora of different venues to start the season. Takes a little longer to sort everything out and understand where everybody's at.
And the Kansas race that Todd points out is on Sunday, May 5th, a week before, halfway through the regular season at Darlington. Well, let's talk about what's in front of us, Todd. You talk about all the new things, but probably the biggest thing of them all is the new aero package. After we left Phoenix last year, NASCAR tested this many, many aerodynamic setups at a Phoenix test in December. They have landed on this one, and there's a lot of garage talk in this with splitters and diffusers and engine strakes. Bottom line it for the listener at home, what can we expect, if anything, that we'll see with the naked eye or describe with our naked eyes calling the action Sunday on MRN?
Hopefully we see the car slipping and sliding around a little bit more and being a little more racy. As they went through this whole package, the pieces that I've gotten out of the teams that were there and played around with this, as they took a fair amount of the diffuser away. Made it much less effective. The vertical fences within the diffuser are very narrow to the center, and they thought that between that and adding some spoiler back to the back made these cars where they were a little more forgiving and that the drivers could kind of hang the rear out a little bit farther and it would catch, which I think will make these guys less edgy on entry and willing to kind of overstep the boundaries a little bit more. So in essence, that should bring some racing back. Anytime we take downforce away, I feel like we make the drivers work a little harder, and that shows their talent. So anxious to see where that plays out, and then compound that with Goodyear bringing a new tire that they're hoping adds a little bit of grip back for the aerodynamics they've lost, but may degrade faster. And when we can get to the point that the tires, pay a penalty for abusing a tire, because its grip goes away, that I think brings comers and goers in the race.
I'm always excited to hear about the ripple effect of this. So we talk about the new aero package, and we hear comments like, well, this will put the racing back in the driver's hands, and the car will slip and slide. Well, there's a ripple effect to that. You mentioned one of them, the tire. Mm-hmm. The other one is to the crew chiefing duties and what the crew chief may or may not have to do differently to accommodate the driver taking more control of the car. What do you feel will be the ripple effect to the top of the war wagon and any setups and adjustments that may have to go along with this changing package?
Well, I think there's a couple things. We've got a 50-minute practice that we start with, so they'll get at least a glimpse of how their car is going to react to this, what springs, what setups they need to work with. I think the ripple effect, we've got a new aero package, so we've then had Goodyear react to that with a softer tire to compound it. Now, how quickly does the lap times degrade from that softer tire and abusing that tire may affect how the crew chief needs to call the race, how aggressive you're going to be on pit calls. Is two tires an option? Do you have to take four? How many laps in do you have to make the decision? You know, 15 laps in, are we going to put tires on, or can we wait till we get to 30? Those pieces will be fluid from the changes that's a third level change because the aero package, the tire, and now what we're seeing on the racetrack. So there's a lot of unknowns going in this race, and the engineers and crew chiefs on top of the war wagon, they're going to have to continue to watch the data during the race and watch what cars do early in the race to come up with best case scenarios for the late race cautions.
You mentioned the 50-minute practices on leading into the Cup race, which you'll hear on Motor Racing Network this weekend. With that 30 minutes extra that crew chiefs will have to sort through this, if you were one of those crew chiefs that were going to send your driver out for 50 as opposed to 20, how would you arrange and spend your practice time this weekend?
So it's funny you say this because early in the week before I had Rudy Fugel on crew call, I had my own thoughts. I thought I'd have two different packages. This is an opportunity to go test because this 50-minute practice happens before you inspect for qualifying and race. So you can do what you want to. I might have geometry changes. I might have, you know, significant changes that I want to do two packages. I could run 25 laps on one, take me 15 minutes, 15 minutes to change, and then run 25 laps on another. That uses 45 minutes. I've got a little cushion there. That might be a learning opportunity. The challenge I found when I was talking to Rudy is that this practice ends at 3:55 Phoenix time. And at 5:30, they have to have their cars presented for inspection. So they don't have time to undo one of those major changes. So it looks like this will be more about what do we want to do with cambers? What do we want to do with springs? What do we want to do with toes? It'll be a smaller change because you only have an hour and a half after practice ends to get your car all the way prepared to have it ready to race.
This will be one data point that will be gotten this weekend that will be used many times later in the year. What's the dissection of this race like, being that it's the first one with this package? What will the dissection process be like when the crews head back to the shops and they start going through all the data?
Well, I think one, it's the first data point, but two, it's the championship race. This is a notebook that you're going to make sure that you're diligent and making sure that you put all the things down and you record not only what you've done well, but what you think you didn't do well and how you should have attained that differently. This is the most important notebook to carry forward if you anticipate that you're going to be one of the final four, and I think every team does at this point. So this one does take a lot of dissection and just dig deep. The great part is you got a 4-hour plane ride typically with your teammates next to you. You're going to debrief that race all the way home.
Well, it's going to be a short race, 312 laps, 312 miles, 500 kilometers. Before we let you go, what are some of the strategies that you feel will be available to you? Can you get away with two tires if you need them out there this weekend?
I think we have to see what happens in practice. I don't know where we're going to be with a new aero package and a new tire. I'm as anxious about getting to practice and watching that and seeing what the lap times do. I don't think there's a crew chief out there that could tell you he has his strategy laid out at this point. I think he's going to have to look and see what this package does and what happens with the temperature they've got out there.
We've got lots coming your way from Phoenix this weekend. We'll have coverage of practice for you, 5 p.m. Eastern time on Friday. We'll have qualifying coverage for you at 2 p.m. Eastern on Saturday. And then we're back for the Shriners Children's 500, 2:30 p.m. Eastern, NASCAR Live Race Day on the air on Sunday, March the 10th. Todd, appreciate the time. We'll look forward to having you on the broadcast this weekend.
Looking forward to being there.
That is championship winning and Daytona 500 winning crew chief Todd Gordon, co-host of Crew Call, and he'll be on the call with us this weekend when MRN hits the airwaves from Phoenix.
Hey everyone, it's Kyle Busch. At Cheddar's, you get a variety of American classics in a place that feels like home. They have comfort food like hand-breaded chicken tenders, homemade chicken pot pie with nearly a half a pound of roasted chicken under that golden flaky crust, slow-smoked baby back ribs so big they're falling off the plate, all for unbeatable prices. And the best part? A free honey butter croissant for every guest. Now that's how they do it. Cheddar's. Get a lot for not a lot.
This is NASCAR Live. Now back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. Over the years, Phoenix has been a major part of NASCAR's history. Cup Series action actually dates back to 1988 and has provided quite a few headlines and memorable moments over the years. Our Tim Catalfambo is here to guide us through the history of NASCAR racing in Phoenix.
2024 has arrived, and with the dawn of the new year, the Phoenix Raceway has reached a milestone. The track was built and opened in 1964, meaning that this year marks the 60th anniversary of what has become one of the most important tracks in NASCAR. As part of that construction in 1964, which took place in Avondale, Arizona in the Estrella Mountains, builders had to deal with the rough terrain, as well as trying to incorporate both a drag strip and a road course. Because of those challenges, the track's signature dogleg was figured into its one-mile layout. The track was built with plans of it becoming a home in the western United States for open-wheel racing. With that in mind, USAC and sports cars started racing at the track almost immediately following the track's completion. In 1988, the track finally lured the mecca of American stock car racing, the NASCAR Cup Series, to its facility. On that early November afternoon, a future series champion was able to capture his first career win and debut his signature victory celebration.
There is no slower traffic now in front of Alan Kulicki, save for Rusty Wallace, and he's a veteran, he's experienced, he can trust him. Now they're going to go around Rick Wilson, and you can see the smile on the driver of the Xerox Ford as he goes down the main stretch for the last time.
As Harry Gantz slows on the racetrack, here comes Alan Kulwicki. After 85 career Winston Cup starts, he finds victory lane.
I know you had just a second here to catch your breath, but is this the biggest thrill as you always hoped it to be?
Without a doubt. You know, you work for something so hard for so long, and you always wonder when it finally comes, if it's going to be worth all the anticipation. But in this case, it certainly was.
So, if you were ever attending NASCAR trivia, you now know that Phoenix Raceway was the birthplace of Alan Kulwicki's signature Polish victory lap. In the 1990s, NASCAR Hall of Famers like Dale Earnhardt, Rusty Wallace, and Mark Martin were all able to capture victories at the 1 mile speedway. And the track even played host to Bobby Hamilton's first career win in 1996. That win came in the famous Petty Enterprises number 43. The first win for that number in 12 years. It was clear early on that the Phoenix market was hungry for NASCAR. Fans would pack the grandstands and also camp out on Monument Hill to watch races. Monument Hill, more commonly known to race fans as Rattlesnake Hill, isn't just famous in NASCAR. At the top of the hill is a marker that is part of the National Register of Historic Places. As the track grew in popularity, it was evident that just one annual event at the facility wasn't enough, leading to NASCAR adding a spring date to Phoenix's slate in 2005. In total, 17 Cup Series champions have won at Phoenix, making the argument the track caters to the best of the best. While among those champions are both Busch brothers, Jimmy Johnson and Jeff Gordon, there is only one driver who can plant his flag in the ground as the king of Phoenix Raceway.
He can coast from here, rolling off turn four. Kevin Harvick goes to the win in the Subway Fresh 500.
Here comes the most dominant car in the field this afternoon. He will win for the sixth time. His biggest win ever comes this afternoon at the Phoenix International Raceway. Kevin Harvick has scored the win.
A simply remarkable performance yet again for Kevin Harvick. Off four, final time across the stripe. The checkered flag is out, and Kevin Harvick is a winner for the ninth time in Phoenix.
Throughout his career, Kevin Harvick was able to master Phoenix Raceway. He won there nine times, including four straight from 2013 to 2015. Part of that streak was a win in the penultimate race of 2014, a victory that secured his spot in the championship four. Harvick went on to win the next week at Homestead to capture his only Cup Series championship. Part of Harvick's highlight reel at Phoenix also includes the closest finish in the history of the track.
Into turn three, Edwards to the bottom. There's contact between the top two. They are side by side.
Carl Edwards to the inside. He has the advantage, but Harvick draws even again. They touch again at the start-finish line. Kevin Harvick scores the win again. His eighth victory at Phoenix International Raceway. What a finish!
Because of Phoenix's place late on the schedule, it's always become a pivotal race in the battle for the championship. That was never more in focus than an incident involving Jeff Gordon and Clint Bowyer in 2012.
Using all of the racetrack on the backstretch here at Phoenix International Raceway, Logano able to stretch it out on that back straightaway. And when they hit the corner, they hit a slow-moving Jeff Gordon, who gets into Clint Bowyer, who collects Joey Logano. All three
three cars slap the wall to the outside of turn four.
Well, there's a big pile up here in the garage area of people trying to get separated. NASCAR officials are here. Brian Patty is here. Obviously, Jeff Gordon's crew, Clint Boyer's crew as well, as they try to pick up the pieces back here with drivers and crew chief.
Clint Boyer was not involved in what took place in the garage area prior, but he may be involved here shortly. A dead sprint by Clint Boyer. Obviously wants to have a conversation perhaps with Jeff Gordon. Jason Toy, he's probably coming your
Clint
way.
Clint Boyer sprinting up into the Jeff Gordon's garage, into his Soller. Clint Boyer's getting held back by a mob of guys from his own crew, but he made a beeline sprint to Jeff Gordon, the back of the hauler here, and now he's been cut off as soon as he gets there to the front of the hauler.
That on-track incident and off-track fracas ended Clint Boyer's hopes for winning the title in 2012. It left Boyer too far back of Brad Keselowski, who clinched the championship for Team Penske the next week. Not too long after that, Phoenix became even more important in terms of crowning NASCAR champions. In the fall of 2018, a $178 million renovation project greatly improved the fan experience at the facility. The renovation project included multiple new suites and one of the most fan-friendly garage areas in NASCAR. Part of the project also included reconfiguring the track, moving the start-finish line to the former backstretch, just short of the track's signature dogleg. NASCAR took notice of the newly world-class facility and awarded the track the championship race for all three series starting in 2020. Since then, we've seen plenty of star-making moments.
Looking for the checkered flag, it's out. Chase Elliott wins at Phoenix. Chase Elliott scores the 2020 NASCAR Cup Series Championship.
Kyle Larson across the line. He will win in Phoenix, and Kyle Larson is your 2021 NASCAR Cup Series Champion. Your 2023 NASCAR Cup Series Champion is Ryan Blaney.
Phoenix Raceway will now always hold a special place in the careers of Chase Elliott, Kyle Larson, and Ryan Blaney. Another champion will be crowned there this November, but before that, another packed house will take in all the action of another exciting race in the Valley of the Sun this weekend.
Thank you, Tim. Coming up, Daytona 500 winning crew chief Rudy Fugel joins us.
Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Underage sale prohibited. Introducing Zone Nicotine Pouches, the perfect balance of unparalleled comfort, longer-lasting flavor, and nicotine that satisfies. Whether you're zoning in during the race or zoning out after a tough day at work, Zone gets you there faster and keeps you there longer. Available in 7 flavors and in 6 and 9 milligram strengths. Find Zone at ZonePouches.com and retailers near you. Own your Zone with Zone Nicotine Pouches.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. William Byron and the number 24 team at Hendrick Motorsports claimed the checkered flag in the Daytona 500. This week on MRN Crew Call, Williams crew chief Rudy Fugel joins Steve Post and Todd Gordon to discuss the win of the 500 and what to expect this weekend at Phoenix as NASCAR debuts its new short track racing package.
We appreciate you joining us in this weird travel week, but your Daytona 500 winning crew chief, we got to talk about a little bit about that. Last week over at Hendrick Motorsports, you were presented with the Cannonball Baker Trophy. That's normally done at a breakfast in Daytona. What was that like for you to get that on campus at Hendrick last week? And just that trophy, that award.
Yeah, it's my first time, you know, obviously winning the Daytona 500 as crew chief, but even being in the whole presentation. So, yeah, I know it's probably different, you know, if you would have experienced it in Daytona. But for us, it was kind of what we expected. But it was good to have it here. We got to have some more, you know, team members to go to the event and the award and the lunch, which is good. You know, anytime you can involve more of the people that help build the car and do everything that we, you know, make us go fast and keep us employed is fun to have them there. So that part was great.
If we want to, I'd love to stay on this, and I want to correct this. He's a Daytona 500 champion.
That's right.
Not a winner.
Not a winner. You're
winner.
A champion.
He's a champion.
I appreciate that. Yeah, thank you.
There's certain things there that you keep. But the week following, especially with it being pushed back to Monday, I remember, now this is years and years and years ago, when we won it, you know, there's a whole lot that goes into it. What's that week like for your team, and how does that set you up differently for the year?
Yeah, so I mean that week was a whirlwind, you know, and it did spin into a little bit after Atlanta, but you know, it was tough. It was you know, so Monday night we didn't get home. We tore down the car and then put it back together to go to the museum, and so we didn't leave the track until like 2:30. So then got an airplane, you know, landed and pretty much went back to work Tuesday morning, you know, a few hours later, took a shower, slept for about 30 minutes, then went back to work. So, because we, you know, so Tuesday was a lot of congratulations and telling everybody that, you know, deserved a handshake and thank you for that and normal preparations for Atlanta. So road crew would normally be off on Monday, but we can't take that, you know, on Tuesday. So everybody came in and you just start working towards Atlanta. So, yeah, it was quite the week. But, you know, you're riding a high. There's an adrenaline rush there from winning the Daytona 500 and being Daytona 500 champions that carries you for a while. The relief off your shoulders of having that win and getting in the playoffs is pretty cool right away to do that.
Let's move forward to Phoenix. And Phoenix weekend, a little unique in the schedule in that you guys start with a whopping 50-minute practice session.
That's wow. 2.5 times what they normally get.
Yes, and yeah. It's about a quarter of the time you used to get. So it's but how do you tackle that practice session on Friday afternoon? Is it a Rudy Fugel 24 test? Is it a Hendrick Motorsports test? At 50 minutes, what do you guys want to accomplish there?
Yeah, so I mean, the first thing to really talk about that's different is, yes, we have 50 minutes, but what's different than ever in a long time is we have to present for inspection an hour and a half after that 50 minutes.
Oh.
So it's not like normally. So normally we would have that 50 minutes. You start working on the car. You have overnight, which the engineers and myself would probably stay up most of that night going through what we want to sim and put in the car. And then the mechanics will put it in the car first thing Saturday morning. And then we present for tech. That's not an option. So that changes your plan. You know, you're going to be limited on what you're going to be able to change, but after practice. So we will, what our practice plan will be, will be knowingly things that we can change in that hour and a half, you know, cause we already have to change, most likely have to change brakes in that hour and a half. And so we're going to be taxed just getting the car ready to race, let alone getting it ready for inspection and changing things. So I think really all of us as a GM group will work on different little things that we can you know, share. All the key partners with Chevrolet will hopefully, we've done this in the past, we'll work together, try to hit different areas to look at. But in reality, I think the addition to normal changes will be springs, cambers, toes, and really like geometries and stuff like that. You're not going to have a ton of time to change.
Was there any push from the crew chief side? I would have done this to try to push inspection off to being Saturday morning instead of being.
Sure. Definitely. Yeah. Right. As soon as we heard about it, we were begging for a reprieve, but I don't know what the deal is, but that's what they want.
Yeah. That was the first thing I said to Steve before the thing. I said, I'm going to ask him about, does he wish inspection was Saturday morning? Just because I always enjoyed that night to just digest. And you can digest not only your stuff, but to especially in a situation here where you've got all of your key partners kind of pooling information, it digesting that in what, 30 minutes, because you've got to implement it, right?
Yeah. I mean, it'll take 15 minutes to debrief with all of our drivers. And then you're going to have to make a decision. And 15 minutes later, what you're going to put in, the engineers will run it through simulation and type it up. And then it's got to go in the car. So it seems like it's a truck or an Xfinity type old school weekend when it's like that, and we'll just try to flex those and execute better than everybody else. That's all we can do.
You've got some history there.
Yeah.
You understand how to work those weekends. But so this is, you know, we talked about going to Vegas, that Chevrolet at least had their notebook. You know, they didn't have any changes. Toyota and Ford did. This is all new for everybody. What do you expect out of this aero package?
Yeah, I mean, just what I heard about from the drivers. You know, Larson was one of the drivers, and then they all kind of echoed the same comments, is that it felt like they had more to lean on, but there was still a lot of off-throttle time, but felt like they could lean on the car, meaning they could put the car in a little bit of yaw, and it was, you could sustain it, you know. And that's, as we peel downforce off the cars and 2-inch blades, all these things at all these short tracks, the biggest complaint that we hear is that, yes, we're off-throttle, yes, they're harder to drive, but I'm scared to run, drive in, you know, dive bomb somebody in the corner, to run in under somebody, to to run a top lane and hang the car out, because there's no edge. So so far, you know, at that test, there was a little bit more to lean on, is what they said, and hopefully that's the case. So then that's all you're looking for. You can make them super hard to drive, and that's great, but that doesn't always put on a great race. You know, you got to be able to go side by side and not be scared to crash. So hopefully that's the case, and we'll see what happens.
And this package it much reduced the diffuser, right? It became a lot smaller and simpler. And they added some spoiler back. Was it when they added spoiler back that they got some of that kind of ability to kind of lean on something?
Yeah, it seems like. So the diffuser, the way it is now, I don't know that it's diffusing a ton, but one of the biggest things that doesn't have the side, you know, skirt type diffuser piece is the skirt on the very side. They have some strakes in the middle, but doesn't have the side ones. So when you have those side panels on, like we have in Las Vegas, the car does that diffuser works better when it's not in yaw. It likes to see the air straight. When you pull those off, it doesn't stall the diffuser as much. So the diffuser works fairly the same, whether it's yawed out or not. And then when you add a 3-inch blade on, then the top of the car and that blade is creating a tighter yaw moment as well, which makes the car, have a little bit more side force. So that should all be helpful.
You can catch that full interview from MRN Crew Call Wednesday at 2 p.m. on YouTube, Facebook, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Coming up, we'll hear from drivers ahead of this weekend's racing action in Phoenix.
Kyle Larson brings his Chevy in. Four tires, Sunoco Racing Fuel.
From fueling NASCAR champions on the track for over 20 years to innovating 94 octane, the highest octane on the market, performance is what Sunoco does. All Sunoco fuel at the pump meets the same top-tier standards as the fuel used in NASCAR.
Money stop here for Ryan Blaney. Four tires with Sunoco fuel.
From the track to your tank, you can trust Sunoco to help your vehicle perform at its peak.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
We continue on this week's NASCAR Live. When NASCAR returns to Phoenix this weekend, it'll do so with a new short track aerodynamic package. And a few drivers have had the opportunity to test it out in December. So how did it go? And what should we all expect to see this weekend? Our Jason Toy is here to take us through the talk of the garage ahead of the Shriners Children's 500.
The West Coast swing is in full effect. Coming off a visit to Las Vegas Motor Speedway, NASCAR will return to Phoenix Raceway for the first time since championship weekend. One major storyline in the offseason was how the sport would try to improve short track racing as they headed into 2024. Well, in December, six drivers were tasked with participating in a test at Phoenix. One of those drivers was Eric Jones, who advocated for NASCAR to try something new with the package.
I hope it's good. You know, I was one of the ones at the test that advocated for this change. I don't think it's 100% an answer. I think it's a step in a direction that we hope is going to be better. So we'll have a good feel for it after the race and knowing how much it helped or hurt in it. So yeah, we'll see. I thought it was better to test. I think the racing would be more aggressive for sure with the grip that we have back now. So we'll see how it really races, but you know, hoping it's going to be better.
So what did Eric learn from the test? Well, he thinks the field will now have the ability to race with more aggression.
Well, we hope more aggressive moves. You know, with the downforce that we had, our consensus was that you couldn't really drive the car hard. You know, we didn't have a tire soft enough to complement how low the downforce was, and so we couldn't really be aggressive in many situations. With this package, we got some downforce back in the car. The diffuser we've went to, the simplified one, seems to let us slide around a bit more. And, you know, overall, we hope it's just going to be a little bit more racy, more aggressive than what we've had.
Someone else that participated in the test was Christopher Bell. His last visit to Phoenix didn't end the way he had liked, as he was battling for a championship and fell short due to a mechanical issue early in the race. But Bell is very optimistic about this weekend after having a fast test at the track in December.
We showed up on the 2023 package. You know, we had a great Phoenix. We didn't finish the race, but I thought our car was super fast. So we had an opportunity to work on the setup and we nailed it for the test. We showed up and we were super fast. Now, with that being said, we start changing rules packages and we definitely lost our edge. You know, I don't think that running the 2023 rules package at Phoenix has anything to do with what we're going to go back there with. But yeah, we were fast as hell when we showed up. That's for sure.
When it comes to the actual race and how you have to have success, Daniel Hemric thinks that restarts and unloading the car while nailing the setup is the key to having success at Phoenix.
I think when you unload there, your raw speed off the truck, having a car that rotates the middle really well, but also has the ability to accelerate early, get off the corner well, I think pieces together to have a great car there. It's really hard to go find the speed if you don't unload with it there. I think almost more than anywhere. It's a place that over the years, you know, location of the start-finish lines have changed and some of the passing zones have changed, but nothing's changed more than the restart zone, how we shortcut the dog leg there. And that's just made for an incredible show, and which to me falls back into the piece of trying to win a race there is good restarts and getting through turn one with a fast race car. You can do that.
Few crew chiefs have nailed the setup and strategy of Phoenix like Rodney Childers. His success with Kevin Harvick at arguably his best track throughout his career speaks for itself. This weekend, Childers will guide a new face behind the wheel of the four car in Josh Berry. Berry has experience racing the next gen car, but is excited to see if he can replicate Harvick's success.
Yeah, it definitely helps going and experiencing that once, right? And getting a good result too. But you know, we were solid that day and having a little bit of practice when we go back, I think all those things and will be good. And you know, like I said, Rodney's pedigree at Phoenix and the four team, it speaks for itself as well, so that makes it a little more exciting.
Some drivers circle their home track as a place they can elevate their game. But for Arizona native Alex Bowman, he views this one in the same light as any other.
I mean, it's just another racetrack, honestly. I do get to see my family and friends a little bit. I definitely put a lot of pressure on myself to run well there, and that tends to not go very well over the years. But, just trying to figure out kind of what I need to do to get better there. Certainly not one of my better racetracks.
Returning with a new short track package and the exciting racing we always see at Phoenix, NASCAR's first of two visits to the Valley of the Sun should provide us with no shortage of drama and headlines.
Thank you, Jason. Coming up, we'll give you a sneak peek of this week's episode of NASCAR Live's newest feature podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. Yesterday, we at MRN dropped the third installment of our newest podcast series. It's called NASCAR Live Presents 2004 Chasing History. This podcast relives that racing season. It had lots of drama. It had heartbreak. It had tragedy. And now we're finding out some of the stories we didn't know back then. This week's episode takes you through Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s dominance at the plate tracks, one of NASCAR's most controversial finishes ever, and a NASCAR Hall of Famer ending a long winless streak along the way. Here's a sneak listen of episode 3. With Rusty Wallace still basking in the glow of a Martinsville win, the NASCAR Cup Series headed south to Alabama, to the Talladega Super Speedway. And at that time, one driver was dominant at this style of racing. And that driver was Dale Earnhardt Jr. Jr. was coming off an impressive speed weeks at Daytona, but as far as Talladega was concerned, he won and he finished second in 2003. Dale Jr. was the man at plate tracks. Fans were in awe, and so was MRN's Dave Moody.
Junior Nation had a very high bar of expectation for Super Speedway races that year. Junior and his team, his whole organization, were far and away the dominant organization on the big tracks. And whenever they had a car in contention to win at Daytona or Talladega, they pretty much did. So based on the Earnhardt name and the Earnhardt legend at Talladega, and based on the fact that he was running up front and very competitive, a lot of folks in that jam-packed grandstand just assumed that Junior was going to go to victory lane and they were going to have a big old party.
Now, throughout his career, Junior had earned the respect of numerous peers, and it was expected that he would find his way to the front at Talladega. The result spoke for itself. Tony Urie Jr., who is Dale's car chief at the time in 04, recalls a bet he made with the flagman that eventually led to a meeting in the NASCAR hauler.
I got called to the NASCAR truck on this one, but it was like the flagman. And I remember him coming by. He come by me about, I think it was Sunday morning. He comes by and he's doing his little check. And he's like, so how you going to do today? And I'm like, well, I feel like I'll do pretty good. And I remember the guy going, so how are you going to do? And I said, well, I'll do all right. I said, I think he'll do good. And he goes, what lap do you think he'll be leading on? And I said, well, probably 7. Like that, and he starts laughing, and he goes, well, I think about 2. And I said, 2? I said, that's pretty aggressive. I don't know if he'll make it in 2. And I said, 7? Possibility, but I said, I don't know about no 2. So, and we just laughed and went on. And the race fired off, and I remember they threw the green, and as soon as they threw the green, he went to the top. And he got in the top lane, and there were some guys pushing him. And when he come by the first lap, he was running 11th or 12th. And I was like, we picked up 12 spots in one lap. And I'm sitting there and listening, and the crowd went nuts. I mean, you could just hear them, like, roaring. And then I'm watching the TV, and he is passing everybody on the outside. And when he got to turn 4, he took the lead. And this is lap 2. And I was just blown away. I was like, how did he just do that, you know? So he takes the lead. He comes through the travel, and I just start laughing. And I was like, well, hey, bud. I said, do me a favor. I said, when you come by the flag stand the next lap, I said, give the flagman the thumbs up because he won the bet. And so if you go back and look, he's coming through the travel, and he's got his thumb sticking out the window net to the flagman. And as soon as he did it, like, they, you know, they're scanning everybody, and they're like, I'd like to see the flagman and the crew chief of the 8 car in the trailer after the race, because they honestly thought we had done something, you know. And it was like, no, we've just, you know, just BSing in the garage, and it just so happened. But I'd have never dreamed in a million years that he took it in 2 laps. But, you know, it was just, that was a testament of just how strong the cars were and how good he was at drafting. I mean, I think, honestly, I think Dale Jr. was a better drafter than his dad.
Catch that full episode right now. NASCAR Live presents 2004 Chasing History. Get it wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Coming up, we'll relive the 2007 Subway Fresh Fit 500.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. This week, we hop into the MRN time machine and take you back to 2007 as we flash back to the Subway Fresh Fit 500.
Jeff Gordon is trying to put it at arm's length. He's up to a 2, maybe 3 car length lead over Stewart.
And right now, he's got clean air and clear racetrack. That's exactly what Jeff Gordon wants. Tries to open up the gap, put it to 2 car lengths now over Tony Stewart. Jeff's got the most breathing room now that he's had the last 5 laps. Maybe, what is it, when they come across the stripe, 0.4 seconds, but that's all. Tony's still there. There's a fast closing, Matt Kenseth and Denny Hamlin.
And the battle is on for third place. Denny Hamlin has battled back from deep in the field. He is wearing out the back bumper of Matt Kenseth in that battle for third.
What a great comeback by Denny Hamlin. He looks to the outside, now to the inside. Matt Kenseth cannot keep the DeWalt Tool Ford down the bottom. Denny Hamlin gets a good look down low.
Denny tries to get a fender underneath him. Won't be able to do it as he hits the straightaway. Watching right now, Tony Stewart. He's lost a couple of car lengths to leader Jeff Gordon.
Gordon is pulling away. The battle now is for third. Here comes Hamlin. Diving to the bottom. He'll take it away from Matt Kenseth. Hamlin goes to third.
And now it'll be up to Matt Kenseth to defend his fourth position, because Jimmy Johnson has found all kinds of speed and all kinds of racetrack. Nose to tail with Matt Kenseth. And Kenseth starts to re-attack Denny Hamlin again for third. Three-way battle going on here. Denny Hamlin hanging on to the fourth spot. Right behind him is Matt Kenseth. And now on the move is Jimmy Johnson.
Johnson down to the inside line. Dials up below groove on Matt Kenseth. Kenseth trying to battle back at the exit of turn number 2. But Johnson's got a wheel inside. They're side by side.
This was the groove and the line that Matt Kenseth used last night in the Busch Series race. It's working for him, and now he's losing a little bit of ground to Jimmy Johnson. There's still fender to fender for fourth.
They hit the start finish line, seven laps to go as they work their way back into turn one. Jeff Gordon has pulled away even more from Tony Stewart, but the scramble from third place on back, still a good one.
Jimmy Johnson has got the fourth spot. He's wrestled it away from Matt Kenseth. Kenseth, though, may not be done yet. Takes a little bit of a look to the outside lane through the dogleg as they race for three.
Johnson has not closed this deal yet. He's trying to get on the outside, trying to block Matt Kenseth, but Kenseth's fender is there. They're still side by side for four.
Racing for the fourth position with six laps to go. Matt Kenseth trying to pull back to the outside, but Jimmy Johnson will clear him this time by.
Jimmy Johnson finally gets sole possession of that number four position. In front of him, Denny Hamlin beginning to reel in Tony Stewart. It's down to about six car lengths now, the gap between second and third.
Leader comes into turn three. We're talking about Jeff Gordon. Lap traffic may be a factor. The first car will be Clint Bowyer as they exit off turn four.
Jeff's only got five laps left to stay at the front of the field. He'll be getting his first win here at the Phoenix International Raceway. They roll back into turns one and two. That scramble from fourth place on back still pretty good.
Jimmy Johnson riding in the number four position. He now is pulled away by about four car lengths over Matt Kenseth. And then comes Jeff Green. Another good night for Green in the car tomorrow races. He rides in the number six position.
Behind him, you've got Kyle Busch and Martin Truex Jr. Although now Kyle Busch has gotten around Truex as Truex is a lap down.
Bobby Labonte up there in the eighth position. Johnny Sauter in the ninth spot. Kevin Harvick, 10th. Several interesting names among the top 10 if they can keep their positions with just four laps to go. Jeff Gordon's lead now one full second over Tony Stewart. They head for three.
Keeping an eye on the DuPont Chevrolet of Jeff Gordon. He's got to be very, very careful here. There are two lap machines in front of him, and they're side by side. David Strummy and Clint Bowyer.
And that may allow Tony Stewart to close the gap a little bit, but getting up there is one thing, getting around is another. We're down to three laps to go. It's Jeff Gordon, Tony Stewart, Denny Hamlin, Jimmy Johnson, and Matt Kenseth. They're in two.
David Strummy gives way to the outside, allows Jeff Gordon to drive easily underneath him. Gordon continues to lengthen the gap over Tony Stewart.
So now Jeff Gordon has got a little bit of a buffer. He's got the lap machine of David Strummy between himself and Tony Stewart. Not much of an obstruction, however. Strummy goes way wide, gives Tony Stewart plenty of racing room.
Tony Stewart starts closing in. He's cleared the traffic, and now with two laps to go, can he chase down Jeff Gordon?
He's going to have to go to the whip if he's going to have any chance of catching the DuPont Chevrolet. Jeff Gordon with a little bit of a bottle off turn number one. That allows Stewart to get within five car lengths.
Jeff Gordon using a lot of real estate off of turn two and now through the dog leg. Tony Stewart closing the gap, put it to three and a half car lengths. Again, Gordon not as strong off turn four as is Tony Stewart.
Coming down to see the white flag, one lap to go. It is Jeff Gordon by three car lengths as they race back into turn number one. Tony Stewart doing everything he can to catch him.
Jeff Gordon has done everything this year but win, and tonight it looks like he's going to get it done. Off turn two, headed for three, Jeff Gordon looking for victory lane.
Half a lap to go for Jeff Gordon at a track that he has never won at before. He closes in on the lap car of Clint Bowyer. Jeff Gordon leads the field off of turn four.
Here comes the DuPont Chevy off turn four and down to the line. Jeff Gordon scores his first win of the year and his first win ever in the Nextel Cup Series at Phoenix International Raceway.
You can listen to that race in its entirety at MRN.com under shows and the MRN Classic Races tab. Folks, that's all the time we have for you for this week. I'd like to thank Todd Gordon for stopping by. Also, our thanks to Rudy Fugel for joining us. I'm Mike Bagley. For the rest of the MRN crew, we thank you for being with us as well. Don't forget, another installment of NASCAR Live wide open on Thursday. Don't forget all the racing weekend action coming up this weekend for you in Phoenix. Until we speak again, so long, everybody.
NASCAR Live is a production of the Motor Racing Network with studios in Concord, North Carolina, and was brought to you by Toyota. For the latest Toyota racing information, visit toyotaracing.com. Today's broadcast was produced by Trey Downing, Pat Jaggers, and Julian Council. The executive producer for MRN is Ryan Horn. Remember to visit MRN.com for all of the latest news and information. NASCAR Live is produced under an exclusive license with NASCAR. Any use of the accounts and descriptions contained in this broadcast must be with the express written permission of NASCAR and the Motor Racing Network.